Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5, the game here on this Friday morning. Vanderbilt is going to be back out on the field for the first time in 3 weeks. Been a while since they've been suiting up and playing, and they will take on the Ole Miss Rebels this Saturday. And to learn a little bit more about this Ole Miss team, we always enjoy our conversations when we head down to the state of Mississippi. We bring in Nick Suss from the Clarion Ledger. Nick, how you doing?
I am doing pretty well. I'm going to talk to y'all, and then I'm going to drive 4 hours, and I'll be in your city. So I'm excited for it.
All right. Well, let's just follow up with where we kind of left off last hour. This is what Ole Miss wanted in hiring Lane Kiffin, right? This is a 1-4 team that gets talked about right now in this conference like they're 4-1, and that's what Lane Kiffin does for a program. I mean, he's obviously not been happy with the conference. He's been outspoken. He's on Twitter. But, you know, I don't know how everybody views it, and that's why I'm asking you, but it's amazing the attention that he garners right now. Like I said, if they just had any old coach and they were 1-4, nobody would be talking about the program. Instead, I feel like everybody's talking about him.
Oh, I mean, you don't have to look very far to find proof of the fact that you're correct. I mean, Lane Kiffin himself said on Wednesday, I went out, I put out those tweets, and I think everybody's forgotten we're 1-4. I feel like they're talking about us like we're 4-1. He completely validates your opinion. You expect wins when you hire somebody like Lane Kiffin, and I think that fans are going to get frustrated if the wins don't start coming, especially when you lose a game against Arkansas where you're favored and it's a six-point game with 4 minutes left, and then you throw two picks in the last 4 minutes, and then you lose a game against Auburn where you had the lead with a minute and 11 seconds left, and it all completely disappears. They want those wins, of course, but right now the attention, the notoriety is something Ole Miss hasn't had probably since 2015 when they last beat Alabama and went to the Cotton Bowl. That was the last time they've been to a bowl game even because of the probation and some bad seasons in between, but yeah, you want this attention. You expect Lane Kiffin to bring this attention, but if all he's bringing you is attention without on-field success, I think it's going to wear thin.
Agreed, and I actually brought up that point. They're fun to watch, you know, obviously on the offensive side of the ball. They have had major struggles on the defensive side of the ball, but, you know, when you look around college football and the SEC, Nick, as you know, a lot of teams are struggling playing defense. Is this anything that can be fixed, or is this just what they are this season?
I wrote about this week, and it's an interesting perspective of, you look at the first three games of the season, and Ole Miss was allowing 51 points per game, which would have been the second worst defense in the history of the FBS since it was consolidated in 1970 or so. In the last two games, they've averaged, I think, 36 points allowed per game, which would still be the worst defense in the SEC, but it's a two-touchdown improvement over where they were. So are they getting better? Yes, it hasn't mattered too much, but they are significantly better on defense than they were against Florida and Kentucky and Alabama, where it looked like any old high school team would be able to put up a couple of touchdowns against them. But offensively, that's the interesting part, where they built up this reputation the first 3 weeks of the season of Matt Corral being this hot-throwing quarterback and then having this gunslinging offense. First three games of the year, they averaged 12.5 yards per pass attempt, which is 2 yards better than LSU had last year. Last 2 weeks, they've averaged 5.5 yards per pass attempt, which would have been the third worst total in all of college football last year. Teams seem to be kind of scoping out this Ole Miss offense a little bit, but the running game has been excellent. Best rushing attack in the SEC by yards per game. They're running the ball more than anyone in the SEC, and they're playing with extremely quick tempo, which is what makes them so fun to watch, that you can blink, you think somebody's tackled, and 4 or 5 seconds later, they're already at the line of scrimmage signaling for the next play. 8 seconds later, the ball snapped, and they're going again. That's where the fun comes from, and it's incredibly compelling to watch when they're grinding and doing everything they want to do, but it gets a little frustrating if they go 3 and out in 12 seconds.
Yeah, and he look, we know what he brings to the table on offense. I mean, this is no surprise. He's every landing spot, he's been able to create, you know, incredible situations with effective offense. I guess the question is, and how much does he talk about it, Nick, is does he have the ability with his coaching staff on the recruiting trail to go out there? Do you think, and will there be a lot of attention on the other side of the ball to try to fix that? I mean, getting better isn't saying much. It wouldn't take much to be better than probably the way this season is going to play out. But how much emphasis do you think he will put on the other side of the ball?
I think it's telling the two guys he hired to be his co-defensive coordinators last December and January are DJ Durkin, who is a very high-profile coach who brings with him a lot of baggage, but also was a two-time National Recruiter of the Year when he was at Florida, and Chris Partridge, who is a former high school coach who himself was a National Recruiter of the Year when he was at Michigan, and he brought in those guys like Rashawn Gary and Jabril Peppers to Michigan, while we all know the talent that Florida had when DJ Durkin was their defensive coordinator. He went after coaches who do have coaching backgrounds and are well-known scheme coaches, but it seems like most of the hires he made on defense were recruiting guys. And I think that's kind of the emphasis of, you can scheme all you want on defense, but in the SEC, you need the talent to match up with the speed on the perimeter and the size on the trenches. So I don't know if he himself is going to be recruiting defensive players. I think he's probably the closer because he's the head coach. But you go up and down this coaching staff, it is all guys with either recruiting pedigree or NFL experience. And I think that's kind of the way they're going to try and fix the defense, is not with, like the past, guys who really know how to recruit Mississippi. I think they're trying to recruit with more of a national bent, get guys from Florida and Texas and some of the areas that you can really fortify your team.
We're talking to Nick Suss. Love talking to him about the Mississippi teams. He is the Ole Miss beat writer for the Clarion Ledger and self-proclaimed sitcom nerd. I'm really curious about that, Nick. I don't think we've asked you about this, but you have the Cheers guys in the in your Twitter thing. Is that number one for you? Because I think all of us, well, I don't know, Chase is a little younger, probably didn't grow up with the sitcoms, but he can probably
I love Cheers, though.
Okay, so what are top three in your mind?
Favorite or best?
Well, that's a good question. Let's go your favorite.
My three favorites, I'm going to say number one is a very modern show. It's called You're the Worst. It ran on FXX from 2014 to 2019. Very dark comedy, relationship comedy, if you are into the trials and tribulations of two people who are terrible but trying to be in a relationship with one another. Number two, I'm going to go with a bit of a cult show, Freaks and Geeks. Ran one season, 1999-2000. Gave the world Seth Rogen, James Franco, Jason Segel, Linda Cardellini, all of these people when they were teenagers. Introduced the world to the Judd Apatow style of comedy, which,
okay,
if you like throwback high school shows, phenomenal. And number three, I kind of struggle with. A lot of times I'll put Friends in there just because it is so ubiquitous and classic. Sometimes I'll pick Frasier or Cheers. But I think just based off of recency bias and how much I've been talking about it recently, you can't go wrong with how well The Good Place ran for four seasons these last 4 years. It was impeccably well made. And if you like fast, high-profile comedy that makes you think, I don't know if you can beat it.
So you have the sitcomologist.com. It sounds like you do a lot of analysis of this stuff.
Yeah, no, if you want to visit that website, if anyone's weirdly curious, I've done everything from rank the 50 best sitcom episodes of the decade between 2010 to 2019 to, I think the last thing I put on there, I just wrote a Frasier script about how I think the characters would react to the pandemic. And I got bored when I was on furlough 1 week and spent 5 hours just making up jokes that I thought the characters from Frasier would enjoy. So, yeah, no, if you want a glimpse inside my very bizarre sense of when I'm not watching sports, I am fixating about how TV characters talk to one another. Go for it.
Outstanding. Outstanding. So, Nick, let's go back to Ole Miss. Do you think we were, this is another aspect of Lane Kiffin we were talking about. Tennessee has an image of him in their mind, Tennessee fans, and even Titans fans, right? We saw him as a very young head coach for the Raiders, and he's made so many missteps along the way. How much are you seeing a maturity to where the baggage that really hurt him in the past with all those opportunities he got as a very young coach as he put in the past? Do you think he's learned from it? Is he a different coach now than he was back then?
Yeah, I think he's a different coach just simply because it's hard to not change when you get filtered through Sabanism, effectively. I mean, when you have been humbled by getting fired by the Raiders and fired by USC and the way he had to leave, or chose to leave Tennessee, rather, you find an offensive coordinator job when you think no one's going to touch you because you're toxic, and you win three SEC titles and go to the college football playoff three times and win a national championship. You start to see how that guy does it, and you pick up some of his quirks while also incorporating some of yours. So I feel like Kiffin has mellowed. I don't think he's the manic guy that maybe he got the reputation for in 2006 with the Raiders or in 2011 with USC or however you want to describe it. But I do think that he still possesses that savvy and that charm of how to deal with young people. And I think we saw that a lot with his tweets this week, where he understands that if you're not going to win games, the way you get attention is by reaching out for attention. So I think he's definitely matured, but he still hasn't lost some of that, you know, wily young guy gunslinger type quality that made him so appealing to teams when he was so young.
We're talking to Nick Suss of the Clarion Ledger, and we were discussing yesterday, I think it was, and I brought up Arch Manning, who of course is the son of Cooper and nephew of Eli and Peyton and grandson of Archie. How much have Ole Miss fans started the whole campaign of making sure he follows in the family's footsteps and comes to Ole Miss and he's the next great Manning quarterback to wear an Ole Miss uniform? Is that getting a lot of attention in Oxford yet, even though he's only a sophomore?
Y'all are 2 years behind. I think Ole Miss fans have had him on the radar since the eighth grade, definitely since the ninth grade, the second that you start seeing his highlight tapes against juniors and seniors in high school games. Yeah, it's natural that whenever you see that name, Ole Miss fans are going to get giddy. I feel like there are a lot of Ole Miss fans who still feel like they missed out on Peyton. I feel like there are a lot of Ole Miss fans who still think that the team peaked with Archie, and then the closest it got after that is Eli. I think that the building that this team has its indoor practice facility in is the Manning Center. The street it's on is Manning Way. This is the only campus in America where the speed limit signs are 18 miles an hour to commemorate Archie Manning's number. Of course they want more Mannings here. It is the whole tradition of this university's football program. So, yeah, I think Arch is somebody that they've identified as a potential prospect. Ole Miss has offered some of Arch's teammates from high school. They are definitely doing the diligence of trying to bring him in, but he's also so young, I don't think he can be offered yet. So any recruiting has been purely preliminary.
Well, and I know this is obviously just, you know, a few years down the road, but with Lane Kiffin and his offensive mind, I mean, you would think that would be a pretty good combination if they were to land him and he becomes their quarterback in a few years.
Yeah, you can't think anything but that. You look at the thing that Kiffin does so well is there's no real rhyme or reason to what offense he runs. He fits it to his skill players. He's thrived with Jalen Hurts, and he's thrived with Matt Leinart. He's thrived with Matt Barkley and so many different styles of quarterback. So, yeah, you look at Arch Manning, you say you have your family tradition here. You have a coach who is willing to make you look like a potential Heisman winner, and you have a fan base that will anoint you as the next great thing, for better or worse, from the second you step on campus.
I have a lot of family in that area, and I can remember going down there growing up. It was, you know, with the NFL, it was Saints because of Archie. And then my cousins my age became Giants fans because of Eli. How many are following the Titans because of what A.J. Brown has done in the last couple of seasons?
I think it's more. I think that A.J. Brown has definitely brought some fans towards the Titans. I think it might be unfortunate that A.J. Brown's former teammate, who now plays in Seattle, is probably grabbing a few more headlines. So that might have split the vote of people who have come to the Titans and people who have come to the Seahawks, especially because DK Metcalf grew up in Oxford and A.J. Brown grew up in Starkville, funnily enough. But Yeah, I think that it's still predominantly Saints fans just because of the old school connection of people getting Saints games on their TV here and Archie Manning and all of that. You got some Titans fans, some Cowboys fans, but yeah, I think the people of Oxford are always going to support players like A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf because Oxford, no matter what NFL team you support, if you live in Oxford, you're probably a college fan first.
Well, Nick, hey, we appreciate the time. Safe travels on your way here to Nashville, and we'll see what happens with that game tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm excited for y'all. Thanks for having me.
Nick Suss of the Clarion Ledger. Always enjoy our discussions with him. The Titans will be on the practice field. Terry McCormick going to join us at the bottom of the hour to talk about that. But first, Darren, you have a word about DraftKings.
Thank you, Chase. I do. DraftKings is live right here in our wonderful state of Tennessee with mobile sports betting. Yes, that's DraftKings. You may know them as the leading daily fantasy brand, but they have taken their passion for sports and developed America's top-rated sportsbook app. This isn't some offshore operation like other gambling sites. DraftKings is legitimate and right here, based in the U.S. with DraftKings Sportsbook app. You can bet from wherever, whenever. You don't even have to leave your house. Download the top-rated sportsbook app and use the code 1025GAME when you sign up. For a limited time, all new users can get a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Once again, that code 1025GAME and get your deposit bonus up to $1,000 only on the DraftKings Sportsbook app. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.
That is the enormous question because it's an enormous game against a very talented Notre Dame team. I think we can safely say that whenever the count started, even if Lawrence were available to play against the Irish, he would not, Reese, be able to practice in time for that game. How do you think Dabo would handle that?
I think you'll put him out there, Scott, and he's the best player, best quarterback in college football, and he's a generational type guy, and he's played a ton. So I would view it almost like an NFL situation where a guy would get mental reps and probably a ton of Zoom meetings and opportunities to study the game plan, which he'll know inside out anyway based on his experience. You know, there's bound to be, if he can't practice at all and can't throw, there's bound to be, you know, a little bit of rust or something. But if he is cleared and able to play, and this is just my judgment on it, certainly not having not talked to Dabo about it, but I can't envision a scenario in which Trevor Lawrence is cleared to play and he wouldn't start the game. I think they'll put him out there and let him work his way into it.
Reese Davis, and I'll just say this. I agree with Reese 100%. I mean, this is the Nick Saban story. If he is medically clear, I don't care if he's been on the practice field or not, against Notre Dame.
Doesn't matter.
He's going to be on the field, okay? And my suspicion is, unless, you know, this is a situation that goes the wrong way, I would be way more surprised today if he wasn't playing in that game than surprised if he was playing in the game. Way more surprised if he wasn't playing. I believe he will suit up and play, whether he practiced that week or not, which probably he won't. He'll be out there because he is their best option, and it's not even close. And whether he practices or not, let's be honest. We just learned right in this market. I don't want to say practice is overrated because I certainly believe in practice. Practice is not overrated. But we certainly had our doubts with the Titans and that 16-day window in between games before they suited up to play Buffalo and what little work they had, how much would that affect their performance? Well, we all saw how that played out.
I think you're absolutely right. I think the question is not whether he would play even if he didn't get to practice. I think the only question is I think I heard Paul Feinbaum this morning talk about the protocols in the ACC, which are maybe not quite the same as in some other leagues. As
we
talked
about,
10 days, I think, is right.
Weeks.
The Big Ten is 3 weeks, and the ACC is 10 days. So it does matter what day he first tested positive, right? Paul Feinbaum was saying, okay, if you trace it back that he first started getting symptoms on Wednesday, that starts the clock of the 10 days on Wednesday and not yesterday or even Tuesday.
Well, the positive test came out Wednesday.
So the positive test was Wednesday. When did he start feeling the symptoms? I mean,
that I'm not sure of.
I don't know if that affects the day, but certainly when you start the clock is important, because 10 days of trying to do the math. So he would not be eligible to be ready until right before, like a day or so before the game, right?
Correct.
Right.
Next Friday?
Yes.
Which is fine. I mean, I
well, presuming that he recovers, okay, that's the other thing. He is feeling some symptoms.
Well, that kind of goes without saying, of course. I mean, we're going on the assumption, yes.
Yeah.
That works out.
He's young and like most people, he's a healthy top-level athlete. He should bounce back okay, but but the fact is, if he were playing in a different conference, he would not be eligible to play against Notre Dame.
Correct.
Well, if he was in the Big Ten, he would.
Yeah, the Big Ten. Is the SEC, is it 10 days?
I don't know. I thought it was.
No, it's less than that. I mean, look at Nick Saban.
I know a lot of workplaces.
He was on the sidelines against Georgia,
right? But that was
a false positive.
Yeah,
they deemed he tested negative so many times. They said, okay, this must be a false positive.
Yeah, that was a little bit different.
He was asymptomatic. We know that Trevor Lawrence does have some mild symptoms, so it's going to be at least the 10 days. I just think it's interesting where it's not like they're doing this on the fly, but they decided 10 days, whereas I think a lot of workplaces the general rule is you're quarantined for 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah. To answer an earlier question, though, the most places have the line against Boston College still at Clemson -24.
Okay, so it hasn't moved.
Okay. This guy is a five-star. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he's a five-star recruit. So it's like we were talking yesterday. Clemson has the numbers stacked so much now. They're just become a magnet. They have all these – they have layers of good players. We'll see what the guy does when he's on the field. Remember a couple of years ago, they had to go to the third-string guy, right?
Wait a minute. Can you go back to what you just said, Willie? What did you say about Clemson?
They are a magnet for talent. They have layers of talent.
So they have people like right behind the people that are okay. Oh, so you're saying there's another big time talent freshman quarterback behind Trevor Lawrence? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the top of the top get to that point.
Oh, the top of the top. Okay.
And you have to gain momentum. Clemson was not always at that level. Right?
Where is Trevor Lawrence
took him a
from?
While.
Really? Where's he from?
Really?
No, I'm bringing it up. I'm going there. Yeah. Sorry,
UT he's
fans.
From Georgia.
He grew up in Knoxville.
No, I think he's a Georgia kid, isn't he?
No.
Yeah, he's from Georgia.
Is he? But I thought he grew up in Knoxville.
But he grew up a Tennessee fan.
You're thinking of T. Higgins.
Okay, maybe I am.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence is a Georgia kid.
T. Higgins and Amari Rodgers were not.
I stand corrected then. But he grew up a Tennessee fan.
T. Higgins, just for the record, Oak Ridge, my mom's alma mater.
Really?
Yeah.
She's Oak Ridge?
My mom was Miss Oak Ridge. Hi.
All right. Did she like the Oak Ridge Boys?
The Oak Ridge Boys are not from Oak Ridge, Tennessee. There's no connection. But
frauds.
When I grew up in Orlando, we played a high school, Oak Ridge. They beat us five times and went to the state championship my senior year. That was not fond memories of playing them. So there's more than one Oak Ridge, but in Tennessee, the Oak Ridge squad, the Oak Ridge Wildcats, that's T. Higgins.
I'm not completely crazy. He was born in Knoxville and then went to high school in Georgia. That's what
born in Knoxville. Okay.
Anybody want to attempt this kid's name? Anybody want to try it?
Oh, it's DJ Uiagalelei.
Wow. Nice.
I was
well
just
done,
say
Elijah.
DJ.
I knew I could count on you.
Say it one more time.
DJ Uiagalelei.
Uiagalelei. It kind of rolls off the tongue once you practice it.
Okay, Willie.
Once
play by play.
Down.
Kick it in. Let's hear a play from him under center.
Uiagalelei. 3rd and 10 from the 12. He fakes the handoff. Uiagalelei. He'll keep it. Turn up field. It's a touchdown. Uiagalelei for Clemson.
Oh, you nailed it. That was good.
Nicely good. Done. Nice Nicely job, done. Well done.
Uiagalelei?
Did somebody say ukulele?
Like Tua all over again.
Tua.
Oh, it was very good. Very good. So, yeah, he's obviously a big-time recruit, and BC, they should have no. But to your point,
I mean, BC's they not did bad. They're not chopped liver, but they
struggled against Syracuse the last time this happened, right?
Yes.
With the backup quarterback. So actually, it was the backup had left.
Backup to the backup.
It was the third string quarterback because the other backup said, you know what, you're going with Trevor Lawrence, I'm out of here. He quit. So it was the third string quarterback, and they struggled mightily against Syracuse, but still hanging in. There's a 24-point favorite over Boston College. All right, we will come back. By the way, the Cincinnati Bengals have announced that Joe Mixon, he's out. They have said the ankle injury is going to keep him out of Sunday's game, so it'll be a Giovanni Bernard starting again for the Bengals. Wanted to pass that along. Speaking of that, we'll come back and talk a little bit about the Titans side of things. Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. Next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You didn't hear going into the break, running back for the Bengals, Joe Mixon. He is still out for Sunday's contest against the Titans, dealing with that ankle injury. Giovanni Bernard will start in his place. That was the case last week against the Browns. It looks like it'll be the case again this week against the Titans. To find out how the Titans have been practicing this week, getting ready for Sunday's tilt in Cincinnati, Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. Terry, how you doing?
Doing okay. How are you guys?
Let's hope this contest goes a little bit better than the last time they went to Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah.
Remember when Andy Dalton, somebody bounced off Andy Dalton?
Oh, yeah. Was
and
that,
he kind of waltzed into the end zone.
Ray Wilson.
It was Bleedy Ray Wilson.
Bleedy Ray Wilson.
Who had a couple of missteps like that last night. So, Titans legend Bleedy Ray Wilson.
That wasn't Bleedy Ray Wilson sighting last night.
Titans
<You're right>.
legend. That was not a good game for them against Cincy. They got torched.
Yeah, that was not good. And by a couple of guys, you know, with Bleedy Ray Wilson, you know, getting done in by Andy Dalton. And Andy Dalton's career has kind of gone down the toilet of late, too. So, you know, just a bad thing overall.
If memory serves me correct, because I was filling in for the pregame show that day at the Omni Hotel downtown, I believe, was that not the same weekend that we lost Rob Baronis? Was that not the day before?
It absolutely was, because I remember seeing it on Twitter or getting a text or something, you know, about it. And, you know, real early that morning, I think it had been reported by one of the Nashville television stations that he'd been involved in a fatal crash. And it just kind of cast a severe pall on the whole, you know, on the whole day and the whole proceedings. You know, it was just kind of certainly unexpected and certainly very surreal.
Yeah, it was just a bad weekend all around. So something we've been talking about this week, and we're going to have it in our pick six contest in the final hour. Cincinnati shipped Carlos Dunlap to Seattle. They got an offensive lineman and a seventh-round pick in return. They need offensive line help. They're going to get their star rookie quarterback killed this season if they don't protect him better. This has all the makings. If the Titans are ever going to break through and get to the quarterback, this is the week, right? And if they don't, what does that mean? What are we going to be talking about on Monday?
If they don't, we're going to be talking about the same thing we've been talking about for the better part of 7 weeks, in that this pass rush has not been good this year. That while they've occasionally affected the quarterback, they've not consistently gotten to him. I mean, last week's numbers, and I know that a lot of people are going to say, well, Ben Roethlisberger was getting the ball out of his hands quickly, but he dropped back 49 times, and the Titans hit him 3 of those 49 times. 3. I mean, if the rate is that low, it would almost be worth a 15-yard late hit penalty just to let him know you're there.
Yeah. Well, how do you explain then, because this is something else we've talked about, then how do you explain the lack of ability to get to the quarterback? Well, where do you point? I mean, you know, they brought in Clowney to affect that. They brought in Vic Beasley to affect that. We know Logan Ryan is gone. He was pretty good in that department. How do you chalk up Dean Pease is not here? Like, where do you start in trying to figure out why it isn't happening?
I'll give you three reasons, and this is just my theory.
Okay.
All right. The first thing is, and yes, I know Jeffrey Simmons has been a beast and been the one guy on that defense that has played really, really well. But Jarrell Casey was the heart and soul of that defense. Jarrell Casey was going to make a play or two every game just about that affected play, that affected how this team was able to stop the run or put pressure on the quarterback. And I think his play was contagious. I think you just go back and rewatch the Baltimore playoff game last year and see what type of, you know, see the heart and soul that Jarrell Casey put into that game. Second thing, Dean Pease. I think Dean Pease knew exactly what kind of deck he was playing with the last couple of years. He knew he didn't have a Reggie White or a Lawrence Taylor that could affect the game by getting to the quarterback on a regular basis, that sort of thing. So what did he do? He dialed up blitzes from everywhere, and they were very well-timed and well-thought-out, whether it was Logan Ryan coming from the slot or Kenny Vaccaro from a safety blitz or an inside linebacker blitz from Jayon Brown or Rashawn Evans. I haven't seen a lot of that this year. What we have seen doesn't seem like it's been nearly as effective. And then the third thing, you mentioned, you know, Logan Ryan. I think the fact that they've been kind of beat up and patchwork in the secondary, Logan Ryan kept a lot of things together back there. Wasn't the fastest guy going, but he was smart. He was savvy. He executed those blitzes very well when they were called. I just don't think when you look at the slot guys that they've used this year, they're both, for the most part, been rookies because Adoree Jackson's not been available. So it's been either Christian Fulton, who's hurt now, or it's been Chris Jackson. And those guys just don't seem to have the savvy. Someday they might. But right now, they just don't seem to have the savvy and the wherewithal that Logan Ryan brought to that position where they used it a lot to get to the quarterback.
So if I told you the over-under was set at 1.5 sacks this weekend for the Titans defense, would you take the over or the under?
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Like, isn't it sad that you just laughed and you went, oh, my gosh, to a 1.5 over-under on sacks against a bad Cincinnati offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably take the under. They may get 2 or 3, but the way things have been going, I don't know that you can bank on that.
Well, and also, do you have Clowney? He hasn't practiced. Are we presuming he's going to give it a go?
Well, we'll know here in a little while when they have to make an injury designation on him. But, you know, Friday is usually the telling day. If a guy can get through practice on Friday most of the time, that gives him the green light to at least have a shot to play on Sunday. So it'll be very telling with Clowney, with Dennis Kelly, and with Christian Fulton and a couple of other guys if they can answer the bell at today's practice and at least get themselves in position to be questionable on Sunday.
That's a good point. We're talking to Terry McCormick, so let's dive a little deeper into that. Dennis Kelly hasn't practiced the last 2 days. You're already using Sambrio on the other side at tackle. So give us the projection. If Kelly can't go for some reason, what they would do at right tackle?
Well, the right tackle would probably become David Quisenberry, who was promoted to the active roster from the practice squad earlier this week. And that probably should have sent off some warning bells. They probably won't have Isaiah Wilson. They might have him active as the third tackle in case somebody gets hurt, because they really don't have a lot of options beyond that. There's, you know, a few of those undrafted rookies like Aaron Brewer that might could slide out and play tackle. Roger Saffold could play tackle in a pinch if you needed him to. But if Dennis Kelly can't go, David Quisenberry would be the first option. And then, who knows, might we see Isaiah Wilson active for the first time if Kelly's out? It's possible.
I think that's that's a really intriguing thing, is do they feel comfortable enough to have him back up? It's pretty clear they're not going to put him in there to start at this point, but if they got into a pinch, is he ready to go out there and physically play?
Well, they say.
And is there any other option? At this point, is there another tackle on the roster?
There might be one on the practice squad. I'd have to look it up. Keeping up with the fifth offensive tackle.
Well, they have a tackle.
I know that I covered the team, but
there must be one somewhere.
There must be one somewhere on the practice squad, a fifth offensive tackle, but his name is not coming to mind immediately. So, if Dennis Kelly's not available, then my guess would be that Isaiah Wilson would probably be active. I wouldn't look for him to start, but he would probably be active. I think, as far as to whether or not he's ready, I can't imagine that he would be a top-notch performer, given what all he's been through and given the fact that we are now 7 weeks into the season and he's not even played one NFL snap yet. So I can't imagine that he would be great. They say his conditioning is getting a little better. So, until we have evidence to the contrary, we kind of have to take them at their word for that. But then there was the report last week that came out that said he was late for practice one day because of an illness. So, you're still seeing signs of that immaturity that we've seen out of a number of guys that have been here. And, some of them make it. Albert Haynesworth had issues with immaturity when he was young and young in his career, and he gave the Titans some pretty good play. And they were rewarded for their patience with him. We saw the immaturity from Pac-Man Jones, from Vince Young, from Kenny Britt, and those didn't pan out quite so well. So it's a roll of the dice, and you hope for this kid's sake that he figures it out and starts to get it, but there's certainly no guarantee of it.
And otherwise, the other issue would be the secondary. You've got, as you mentioned, Christian Fulton, who left the game last week, hasn't practiced. Jonathan Joseph hasn't practiced, and that could be just a veteran thing, but he already is a guy that's probably playing a bigger role than they had planned, so that leads us to Adoree Jackson. Are we fairly confident he'll be out there on Sunday?
Well, they're not tipping their hand on it, that's for sure. He's been out there at practice and, doing a few things, but we don't get to see much anymore because of the, it's only open for stretch and individuals. So, you get to see very, very little. I think, I was told when Adoree's injury happened that it was about a 4 to 6 week injury. And if that's the case, if my source is correct, then right now would be right about the time that you would expect him to be coming back from it. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do. Without Christian Fulton, if he's not able to go, they're going to be very, very thin in the secondary. And Adoree Jackson could probably give them a boost, even if he's not 100%.
Talking to Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. And something that we spent a lot of time on, and I know we've talked to you about this, you mentioned the two players that were gone from the defense, but are you ready to say it was a mistake, or maybe it's still, a work in progress of not having a dedicated defensive coordinator on this team, whether it's you have Shane Bowen calling plays or Mike Vrabel as both the head coach and the DC. Do you think that that's factoring in?
I think it has to. It's on some level, it may not be a huge factor, but I think it has to have some weight. Let me just say this. If Shane Bowen is going to be the guy that calls the plays, then wouldn't you be better off to go ahead and give him the title of defensive coordinator and let him make that his task and his mission every week?
Yes.
And hire an outside linebackers coach to fill his old position, and if Mike Vrabel is insistent upon being the defensive coordinator himself and you keep Shane Bowen as the outside linebackers coach, then I think Vrabel would have to step back, except for the supervisory may not be the right word, but the capacity, you know, the CEO capacity of having a hand in the offense and special teams in terms of having the final say would still have that. But don't you think he would have to kind of pull himself away from the offensive meeting rooms and just hand that over to Arthur Smith and say, this is your job. Do what you do unless I tell you not to, you know, in terms of that. I think that, you know, you have to do one of those two things, and who knows, that may be what's being done. You know, they don't spill much out of there in terms of their coaching strategy, their scheme, and how they go about things. But to me, you know, that's my way of thinking. You either hand Shane Bowen the defensive reins, or if Mike Vrabel still wants to have a heavy hand in the defense, then you pull yourself out of the offensive situation and tell Arthur Smith to run that, because somebody's being spread too thin, whether it's Bowen or Vrabel or both.
Yeah, well, I feel like he's, and again, we don't know. We're not there. You know, I'm not there, and they don't let you in the meetings. But I feel like that Arthur Smith is more allowed to do his thing. I think we saw that he earned the trust of Vrabel, that he's got the offense under control. He's got Tannehill, you know, clicking as the quarterback and everything there. So I kind of feel like the offense, it is all right. It's Art Smith's show. But my whole thing is, if you're Vrabel, just like you were saying, if it's Shane Bowen, then name him the DC and let him do the job. You don't have to micromanage like some other coaches, because we know that micromanaging can lead to bad things. And, you know, I'm not using 1 year necessarily, but his 1 year as DC at Houston wasn't all that great. And granted, he did have injuries. So I feel like it's slowing things down, so to speak, in a year where, you know, defenses aren't as good maybe as they usually are. You don't want to add anything to that.
Yeah, you know, and it may be, you know, to use the old saying, that there may be too many cooks in the kitchen when it comes to the defense. And maybe one voice would be better than two or three or four, because, you know, he has said on numerous occasions that everybody kind of chips in. And I get that, because you don't want Anthony Midgett, the secondary coach, to be uncomfortable with something that's going to be called on game day and not feel confident that his guys can't go out and execute it. So you want that input. But at the end of the day, somebody's got to have the final say in that defensive room, whether it's Vrabel or whether it's Shane Bowen. And who knows, that may be one of the things that's holding this thing back.
What about special teams, Terry? We know that they had one of their worst weeks, if not their worst week, last week against Pittsburgh. We know the kicking woes and how they've kind of been up and down with Gostkowski, but you expecting a bounce back on special teams?
Well, you would hope so. I think one of the things that caused the Titans special teams, beyond Gostkowski's miss, because that field goal's got to be made, but the other things, like, you know, Khalif Raymond muffing the short kickoff and things like that, I just think the Steelers special teams were excellent last Sunday. And I think that, you know, their special teams unit basically outplayed and outcoached the Titans special teams unit for a good part of the day. And, you know, and sometimes when you're the better prepared team or you're the better coach team in that regard, you know, for that week, it shows up and it pays off. I mean, because the Steelers kept, you know, a lot of teams now are willing just to take the touchback, drill the ball out of the back of the end zone, and go with it. The Steelers, kind of borrowing from the Bill Belichick school of thought, they would kick that high short pooch kick, make the Titans return it, and usually the return man, Khalif Raymond, was stopped somewhere in between, you know, the 18 and the 23-yard line, so they were gaining, you know, 5 to 7 yards of field position by not doing the touchback. So it's just one of those things where, you know, Titans special teams, except for the field goal kicking inconsistencies, had been pretty good up to that point. because, you know, Brett Kern's one of the best punters in the league. Khalif Raymond is a decent return man. But I think they'll bounce back. But it certainly was a rough day for them on Sunday.
Do they get it done Sunday? Do they bounce back and win?
They should. If they don't, then there's going to be some serious questions. I mean, I know the Bengals have played a lot of close games, but they still only have one win. And last year, I think they went 2-14. And I heard a stat that said that like 8 of their losses were by 7 points or less. So, you know, if you're the Titans, you probably do expect a close game. You don't probably don't expect to go up there and win 31-10. But I think you do expect to go up there and win because you've got the better team. And, you know, for the most part, you've got the better talent. You've got the better offense. You've got, you know, a coach who's, for the most part, except for the defense's third down and pass rush woes, pretty much on top of things. So, yeah, you should have the advantages.
Terry, good stuff as always. Really appreciate it. You have a great weekend. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Terry McCormick, TitanInsider.com. Biggest concern for you going into this game on Sunday is what, Willie?
Well, for me, it would definitely be the defense, you know, because Joe Burrow, they're not overly efficient, but they are a threat. You know, it's interesting, without Joe Mixon now, Giovanni Bernard he's been around for a while, right? He's really a pass-catching back. He's not really a guy that you're going to hand the ball to.
It's like a third-down specialist.
Yeah, he has been, and he's been a good one for a long time, but he's not a guy that you turn and hand the ball to. Joe Burrow is actually the leading rusher coming in for the Bengals without Mixon in there. So that's a concern for the Bengals, but they have some weapons. They can score, and if you're down a couple of defensive backs, you are going to have to do a little patchwork there. So I am a little concerned.
Yeah, I mean, mine is going to continue to be the pass rush because with that offensive line that Cincinnati has, you should be able to get to the quarterback. And Joe Burrow, and if you can't, I mean, that right there is just going to, I mean, if it's me, the confidence is going to be completely gone and create more problems. So that's my concern. They got to be able to get to Joe Burrow and make some plays. I mean, your over-under question is a very good one and a scary one. I mean, I hope it's over, but going to have to see it before I can believe it.
Do you think they'll just go empty backfield and just say, listen, they can't cover all of our guys. They don't have enough good coverage guys. They don't have a great pass rush. We don't have our main running back, so we're just going to sling it. We're going to throw it a ton.
Well, didn't they do that against Cleveland? They didn't have Mixon for Cleveland.
You're right. Isn't that
what they did? They put
30-something
up on the board?
Pretty much. They put 34 on the board.
I mean, the problem is they've
got issues on the offensive line, right? They lost three offensive linemen in that game. So, as you heard Rocky Boyman, it's one you can spread it, and Joe Burrow, he certainly did that a lot in college, and he can run a little bit. He's used to it. But when you only have five blockers, you are going to have some precarious moments there. But that's why we're getting back to you have to be able to pressure with the front four against this team. You have to be able to do it. It is alarming. It will be alarming if they can't do it here.
Agreed.
Are they getting Clowney back? I guess we'll find out here soon. They will go onto the practice field fairly soon, and we'll feel a little bit better about Clowney's chances of playing and Kelly.
Well, they're on the practice field. They're going to be done in about 15-20 minutes. We'll actually hear from Mike
Vrabel
at 12:25.
You know, you get that Friday status where some guys
are ruled
out.
Well, we're
going to
hear Mike Vrabel at 12:25, so we'll know.
Yeah.
That's when we'll know.
He'll be asked, I'm sure.
Yeah, sure he will.
We might get a couple of questionables.
Hopefully he's in another good mood today.
Yeah, let's hope. Let's hope.
I think Adoree Jackson's going to play. I do not believe for a minute Isaiah Wilson is on that field. Not for a minute.
No, I agree with you.
Not even as a emergency backup.
No.
Did you guys scour the roster to see if you could find another offensive lineman that might be a possibility?
Besides Quisenberry?
Well, yeah, we know Quisenberry. He might have to start if they don't have Kelly. That's the thing. Who is the third tackle if Kelly can't go? If it's not Wilson.
A tight end?
It's going to be
Michael Pruitt,
Paul Adams, Brandon Kemp.
Okay.
And that's it.
The Adams, Paul Adams.
Is he related to the Adams family?
No, that's the kid from here, right?
He's from
CPA.
Missouri. Yeah, he went to Missouri.
Okay. Well, that could be a great story then.
They just signed him this week.
Yeah, they signed him this week. He's a local kid.
Yeah. All right.
Grew up a Titans fan.
So so that's the guy then.
Yeah.
Yep. Or Brandon Kemp.
All right. We will, no relation to Sean. We will come back. Or Tony. Let's find out who or what is on your list. Who or what has made you mad?
I've been ready for a week. Let's go.
I'm ready. I'm ready too. I've got it. I've been waiting all week. I've been waiting all week to let you know what's made me mad this week. It's a driver. I'm just saying. Not a golf driver, but a driver on the road. We'll come back. 615-737-1025. Hour number three next on ESPN 1025 The Game.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.